This is an AI-generated summary of Hansard for Thursday, 13th June, 1901. The House of Representatives. Alfred Conroy initiated the debate, noting an urgent petition against the Fremantle election on the grounds that the deposit did not comply with Western Australian law. The Speaker also observed that the Elections and Qualifications Committee could have acted after the expiry of sitting days. Edmund Barton suggested that Mr. Conroy move an amendment when the petition was formally referred to the committee. Conroy eventually withdrew his motion. Richard Crouch asked the Prime Minister about islands in Australasian waters claimed or unclaimed by European powers. Mr. Barton replied that information was being collected and maps were under preparation. King O'Malley inquired about savings from the Cycle Corps at the Melbourne General Post Office, with Philip Fish responding that the return was being prepared. Dougal Thompson questioned the New Hebrides and French annexation, to which Mr. Barton stated that the Commonwealth would request communication before any agreement was concluded. William Spence asked if telegraph construction workers were still classed as temporary hands, and Mr. Fish replied that their claims would be considered along with corresponding positions in other states. Joseph Cook requested papers on the Pacific Cable and the New South Wales Agreement with the Eastern Extension Telegraph Company, and Mr. Barton confirmed that they would be issued as soon as they were ready. Adcock moved that the petition against the Fremantle election be referred to the Elections and Qualifications Committee. Conroy opposed the motion, citing non-compliance with Western Australian law regarding the deposit and deeming the petition frivolous. Richard Crouch pressed for proof of non-compliance, and Alan McLean questioned Conroy's evidence regarding the missing deposit. Thomas Ewing asserted that the petitioner had a right to fair play, while Conroy maintained that the House could settle the matter. Edmund Barton interjected that the inquiry belonged to the committee. John Christian Watson raised a point of order, suggesting that the petition should not be debated before the committee had investigated. The Speaker remarked that the House was competent to advance reasons why the petition should or should not be referred. After further debate, the motion was resolved in the affirmative. Mr. Barton then tabled a report recommending that proceedings be opened by prayer and moved that the standing orders be suspended to adopt the report. This motion was carried along with a resolution regarding the audit bill. Alfred Deakin moved that the audit bill be recommitted. He also moved to omit bracketed words from Clause 11 of the Act's Interpretation Bill for clarity. Further amendments were made, including changes to subclause C, by inserting the words otherwise than in the course of a judicial proceeding, as well as other wording adjustments. These amendments were agreed to after discussion. Debate turned to provisions regarding proclamations made by the Governor-General. Members discussed whether the Governor-General required authority to revoke a proclamation and debated interpretations following the English Act. Amendments were agreed to modify clauses concerning the power to make and alter proclamations. Mr. Smith moved Clause 37, leading Mr. Deakin to propose additional changes to the wording of the Act. After further suggestions, the preamble was amended and the bill reported with amendments. Mr. Deakin then moved that the bill be dispatched for passage as soon as possible and proposed that the standing orders be suspended to allow the bill to pass through its remaining stages without delay. The motion was carried and the bill proceeded to its third reading. During discussion on a public service bill, William Lyne moved that the bill be read a second time, acknowledging the challenge of substituting social influence in place of existing practices in the states. Mr. Lyne noted that the workings of such public service acts in the states had been unsatisfactory. He explained that finding a suitable candidate for the position was difficult. Lyne clarified that the government would require a qualified person for the role, proposing a salary of £1,500 per year for the commissioner, and suggesting that if honourable members thought an increase was warranted, he would not object. He also proposed the appointment of 6 inspectors under the commissioner to ensure effective oversight. Mr. Lyne detailed that the bill was divided into five parts, and that the reorganization of the public service would be into the special division, the professional division, the clerical division, and the general division. He recalled that when the New South Wales Public Service Board first began its duties, it appointed sub-boards, and the public service was essentially knocked to pieces, losing control over its officers. Addressing these past difficulties, Mr. Lyne argued that the new structure would prevent similar administrative disruptions by placing the general administration of the service in the hands of one commissioner, assisted by six inspectors. He also explained provisions regarding life assurance for public officers. Under these provisions, each probationer and officer would, with an assurance company or society registered and carrying on business in the Commonwealth, secure assurance on his life. This assurance would provide for a lump sum payment on death before age 60, an annuity if the officer survived beyond 60, and a refund of premiums if the officer retired or ceased to be a member of the public service before attaining 60, unless he elected to continue making payments. Further debate touched on matters of salaries and promotion within the public service. Mr. Lyne remarked that while recommendations from the commissioner allowed for a public servant to climb positions, in some states promotions took as long as 5 years. He emphasized that the increases provided by the bill were automatic up to a fair living wage without dragging down the prospects of junior officers. Despite some questioning from members regarding comparisons with the states, Mr. Lyne maintained that the system was designed to keep officers in the positions they initially held, preserving the integrity of the public service while enabling gradual advancement based on merit. Concluding the session, Mr. Barton moved that the House, at its rising tomorrow, adjourn until Wednesday next. The Senate. The Senate received a petition and moved on to a question of urgency regarding adjournment. Senator Gregor McGregor from South Australia moved to adjourn until Friday the 14th at 1:30. Senator Lieutenant Colonel John Neild objected, preventing the motion. The President affirmed the objection, and Senator Edward Pulsford quipped about the unkindest cut of all. The President clarified the standing orders regarding motions for adjournment on urgent matters. Senator McGregor thanked the President and said he would take another opportunity. Senator Sir Frederick Sargood of the Free Trade Party inquired of the Postmaster General about a letter from the Lieutenant General commanding the British Contingent China Field Force addressed to the Prime Minister. The letter had been read in the House of Representatives, but not laid before the Senate. Senator James Drake of the Protectionist Party, in his role as Postmaster General, agreed that such papers should generally be laid before both houses. He stated that instructions had been given for circulating copies of papers laid on the table of one house among the members of the other, promising no undue preference. Senator William Higgs asked if the government would instruct that all bills be punctuated. Senator Drake responded that the Attorney General had already given that instruction. Senator Sir Josiah Simon questioned if there was an engineer-in-chief for punctuation, to which Senator Drake replied that the drafter, the minister, and Parliament would all be responsible. Senator Sargood asked if the government intended to appoint a committee of businessmen and accountants to prepare bookkeeping systems. Senator Drake replied that the Treasurer did not intend to appoint such a committee and that experienced government officers would devise the system. Regarding a supply bill received from the House of Representatives, Senator Drake from Queensland moved to suspend the standing orders to allow the bill to pass through all remaining stages without delay. Senator Neild objected, deeming it a deliberate attempt to belittle the Senate and treat it as a chamber of revision. He stated that the bill deserved full consideration and that the government was treating the upper chambers as having no right practically to discuss finance. Senator Drake interjected that the same practice was followed in the other house. Senator Robert Best interjected that the bill would be considered in committee. Senator Drake then stated that the standing orders of the other house had been suspended on Wednesday, to which Senator Neild argued that this suspension had only occurred after the estimates had been under consideration for some length of time. Senator Drake denied that claim and offered to quote from the record. Senator Neild stated that a bill involving an expenditure of practically £500,000 was being rushed through without proper consideration. Senator Albert Gould interjected that this was an important bill because it was the first financial bill and that the Senate ought to lay down its course. Quoting from a contingent notice of motion regarding any supply bill received from the House of Representatives, Senator Neild noted that the Postmaster General could move to suspend the standing orders to enable the bill to pass through all its remaining stages without delay. Senator Drake countered that if another bill came up, he would have to move again. Senator Neild questioned the hurry and expressed his belief that the federal cabinet was attempting to interfere with the Senate's constitutional powers. Senator Gould remarked, "We should approve of an expenditure of £49,100. Not one single item is set out in the bill." Senator Best interjected that the estimates of expenditure showed all of the items, but Senator Gould countered that they did not reflect any alterations made by the House of Representatives. He continued, stating, "It is not possible to deal with a measure of this kind in this way. Our power is to suggest amendments to money bills, but how can we do that when nothing is shown as to how the money is to be appropriated?" Senator Anderson Dawson said, "We can reject the bill." In response, Senator Gould stated, "They cannot provide those funds in the dark. We are not going to say, we will give you power to spend £5,000 as you please." He called this a direct insult and a flout to the chamber. Senator Sir Frederick Sargood expressed regret that the first supply bill was presented in that form. Under the Commonwealth Constitution, the Senate now stood in a different position, and it was clearly part of the Senate's power to deal with any items in a money bill. Although he could not imagine that the ministry had done so intentionally, Senator Best agreed, stating, "The bill deals with a lump sum of £49,100, and it denies this chamber the right specifically granted under the Constitution." He continued that it was not possible to make an alteration by attaching the schedule, and recommended that the Postmaster General reconsider the matter so that the Senate could properly exercise its constitutional rights. Senator Josiah Simon asked a question of the Postmaster General before being interjected by Senator Simon Fraser, who stated that it was irregular, while Senator Simon noted that the figures did not tally. Senator Drake offered to lay a correct copy of the estimates on the table and asked that the Senate refer the matter to the Committee on the Bill. He added that if the Senate wished to exercise its right to suggest alterations, it could propose that the amount be reduced by a certain sum and specify the particular item to which the objection applied. Senator Thomas Playford recommended that the estimates not be sent at all, since only the bill had been presented. Subsequently, Senator Drake moved that the debate be adjourned. When Senator Simon asked if the Senate would consider the actual bill passed by the other House, the President confirmed that the paper would be laid on the table. The motion to adjourn the debate was agreed upon, making it an order of the day for the next session. After laying the paper on the table, debate resumed on the Post and Telegraph Bill. The question was to have the bill read a second time, and an amendment was made by Senator Gould to insert the name Senator Dobson, which was agreed upon. Senator Simon then proposed an amendment to omit the words "for this sitting" and insert "temporarily until permanent standing orders are adopted by the Senate on the report of the committee appointed to prepare the same." This amendment was also agreed upon. Senator Dawson expressed concern over Clause 54 of the Post and Telegraph Bill, specifically noting the potential for censorship and the impact on legitimate activities. Senator Thomas Glassie agreed with many of the points raised and stated that better explanation was needed so that each matter could come into focus. Senator Hugh DeLargy complained that unless matters were made clear, amendments might have to be moved. particularly regarding the clause relating to the rates for the carriage of mails and telegrams. He argued that without uniform telegraph rates, the situation would leave the country altogether different from other United Nations. Senator Gregor McGregor echoed similar sentiments by saying, "I would like that definition to be extended," and raised questions about the amendments so that legal matters could be properly addressed. Senator Dobson stated that the states, having handed over the entire control of the postal department to the Commonwealth, were not bound to carry all of the mails. After these comments and suggestions, Senator Drake thanked the members for their contributions and stated that the suggestions would be examined in committee. Following the motion, amendments were added to the overall list, and a new senator was seated as president. The day's business then concluded with further inquiries by Senator William Higgs regarding pending issues. With no further objections raised, the session ended. This has been a LaunchLab production. LaunchLab.com.au